Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Two Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about Super Mario Galaxy. Because
the Super Mario Galaxy movie.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
The most awkward title since The Transformers, the movie.
We'll get to it, but just...
Yeah.
Just for a second. Like, uh-huh. Why do you name it... that
I to be perfectly honest I think that it's because it's trying to, like, there's a larger discussion that we're going to have I want to have about this and this kind of new frontier, but it feels like they are catering to the gamers. Because the only people that care that it would be called the Super Mario Galaxy movie are the people that actually played Super Mario Brothers that are deeply invested, and they wouldn't want it to be called... Why is it called Super Mario Brothers 2, the Super Mario Brothers Galaxy movie, or Super Mario Brothers 2? Because it's not taking place like the Super Mario Brothers 2 game. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's baffling, and it's like we'll get into that movie eventually. But before it turns into what I imagine might be just a shit fest, let's talk about some things that we like maybe watched that we did enjoy this week.
Yes.
I can't say too much about this because I know you haven't gotten to it, but Jury Duty is kind of sort of back, a show that you turned me on to that I also fell in love with. And then it, like, we didn't think there was any way we would get another season of this.
Yeah, it was like a one and done.
We kind of don't. It's called Company Retreat. It's the same style premise, like, the whole show is fake, like, and one person thinks it's real. Not something, it's been done. I think Jury Duty probably did it as good or better than any other series that's tried to do something like that. Like Joe Schmo, like the first season of Joe Schmo, I think was pretty interesting, but I think the concept ran thin. And I think the team behind Jury Duty knew that concept could run a little thin because they wanted to replicate it, but they knew they had to do something different. So whereas Jury Duty seemed, it was a bunch of people just being in character and improvising basically everything. And it was just kind of like, just everybody just roll with it, you know?
Yeah.
This is legitimately like you scripted an episode of Parks and Rec or a season of Parks and Rec and then put one person who didn't know it was a TV show in it, because almost everything they do is scripted, like because it is a company. So all of these people have to know each other and have been working with each other for years. So they had to, like, really memorize things. And it kind of loses something in that, but it's also still extremely compelling. You do get pulled into, like, the narrative of this fake company. Like, it's really easy to feel like you're watching an episode of The Office and be kind of invested, and it makes it a little difficult to divorce yourself. It, like, it's you know it's all fake, but
yeah,
like you get I don't want to ruin any moment, so I'm trying to tiptoe around things. You just get invested in these characters, and you kind of become just like the guy, where you're a little more in it, and it's less voyeuristic, maybe, as jury duty, because it's I don't know, it's really interesting the way they tried to pivot and still hold on to that core premise of the show, not in a bad way, not like it's all still really fun, really compelling. It's a easy fucking binge. Like, it makes sense that they dropped the episodes in the batches that they did, just over 3 weeks, because it is just every time you finish an episode, it's just like, well, I want to see like what's next, you know. The one really, really interesting postscript that I feel like this isn't a spoiler. Apparently, they're doing a complete behind the scenes series of this specific season, which they didn't really do this for Jury Duty. Like, they like a post, like one episode, like kind of breaking some stuff down, but like they're doing an interview style show hosted by none other than like current favorite actor of this podcast, Mr. James Marsden. Who is coming back to do like the Andy Cohen thing, it looks like.
Yeah, that's how they actually framed it when I saw the announcement, which made me all the more reason of like, I really need to get to on this show. But it's just been, I needed a time where I wanted to binge like big chunks of it. So you
can just watch the whole thing now. So yeah, it's a perfect like, we have a weekend off, or just we have this day and we don't want to do anything except eat snacks and watch some like life affirming television. Like this guy is so nice. Like the Jury Duty, like the guy was like really sweet and like just a good kind of like, I want to kind of hang out with this guy. The guy in this, Anthony, is like, it's the nobody is this nice guy. Like, he's just so, like, not perfect, but it's hard to believe that he's not the one who's acting. Like, it's just everything he does is just so sweet and just so like what you aspire to be that it makes it a little hard to believe, but you know, like that's why they do, I guess, the search that they do, because that it is compelling on reality show. The reason why the Andy Cohens of the world exist is because we generally, as humans, we want to see the train wrecks, we want to see the drama, that's not this show. This show is about like we can be good even in the face of like craziness or just absolute shittiness or things. Like, we can be just good people, and it is about like this guy being a good person. And kind of, again, not, I don't think this is really spoilery, but you know, they give away the secret at the end, and like almost without fail, every single person was like, we cannot believe how good you are. Like, the things that people would bring to you, and you would just be like, it's going to be okay, man. Like, we'll figure this out. Like, don't worry. Like, I'm here. I got your back. Just stuff like that. It's crazy. I mean, nobody showed up with like, oh, hey, like I'm actually a member of the KKK. And but it is things that where it's like, you're, cause he's a temp at the company.
Yeah.
And the whole idea is like, this is not your fucking problem. You took a temp job. You're only going to be here for like 2 weeks. None of this is your problem. Like, you can easily just be like, that's y'all. Like, don't pull me into this mess. I'm the temp. I don't want to get involved in it. but almost like without any real like provocation, if somebody has a problem, he's just like, okay, what can we do? Let's solve this. Let, you know, it's really sweet. It's really fun. It's like I said, it's an easy binge, and I'm really excited about like a further exploration of this, like more behind the scenes stuff and commentaries. They're putting out episodes with commentaries from the people involved in the show. And we've never fucking had that.
No, no. And also like, what I do love about this, and this actually goes to something that we watched that we're recently, like, a new season of just came out and that we watched because it's a show that we really love because it's kind of life affirming, not even a life affirming. It's like Jury Duty. It shows you that there is good in the world. You just have to look harder to find it. And like, you know, I like the fact that they're deep diving into this. Like, they're making sure, like, they understood, like this started as a show that was on Freevee.
Yeah.
Like, and it became such a groundswell hit when people needed this kind of this feel good hit, that they switched it over to Amazon, and then Amazon realized, oh, we have a hit here, and now they're trying to figure out a way to allow people to stay. Like, it's still crass. I mean, we know this, right, Logan? Like, it's still crass because they're trying to get numbers for advertising. But
yeah.
But the fact that they're doing this not with some kind of fucking, like, not the Bachelorette. I mean, this is all going on while this fucking drama about the fucking worst human being in the world.
I mean, yeah.
Like that worst, one of the worst human beings, like, hit her child with a fucking chair. You should actually be in jail. That woman should be, like, anyways. But it's kind of nice to see that they went, oh, this is a hit. We need to put more content out. And they're literally putting more content out so that people can re-experience this world. Like, and that's like kind of awesome that we're getting something that feels good and not something that feels like belittling and crass and just shitty.
It, you know what it really, really reminded me of is like in the heart of COVID, there was a brief internet sensation by, speaking of The Office, everybody's favorite Office star, had this little video show that he would do.
Yeah.
Was it called Just Good News?
Good News. Good yeah. News. That he eventually sold for like $100 million to
So he sold, like, he built up this like groundswell of like, hey, here's news, but it's good news because the world sucks. And like that suckiness is like just everywhere. So let's focus on some good. And it was really fun and sweet and heartfelt. And like, it was such a positive thing. And there's no way, we all knew he couldn't do it forever. Like, COVID was going to break. Everything was going to kind of sort of get back to normal.
Yeah.
He had, you know, a life to get to. He's a star, you know?
Like a filmmaker, a movie yeah. star. He had a lot to do. So we knew that. Yeah.
So he sells the show with the idea that like somebody will carry this on. Only that's not what happened.
No, it is not what happened. Unfortunately, it was the worst kind of thing. And it kind of like, I mean, like, I'm not going to get into the behind the scenes of that particular thing because it just, like, there's only rumors and hearsay, and I don't
very much feel from the outside where it looks like what somebody bought this to stop it.
Yes.
Not to continue it, to stop it. So while like a lot of Amazon is like really evil and just money hungry, corporate greed bullshit, this is the kind of thing that could easily just be stopped.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean,
and instead they've somehow managed to convince them to double down on it and like go into more depth of like what goes into something like this, how we can try to like recognize the goodness and humanity, like in people, in everyone, and like just be a positive force, because like there's not a lot of that, man.
No. Well, so like on that note, I want to kind of like offer up another show that I think that people should be watching, especially like on this kind of tip of like the world is actually a good place. So Love on the Spectrum came back. It's in its fourth season. It just got renewed for a fifth season because it was that much of a hit. Like instantly it dropped on Friday. We watched, this is what we were watching, all weekend long, when we could, and it's only seven episodes long, but this show, since the Australian version, and I truly suggest that anybody, if they like Jury Duty, if they liked that feeling of Jury Duty, if they liked that feeling of Project Hail Mary, where you just feel good about human beings, and you're kind of a little jaded about dating, watch this show. This show will reaffirm your humanity, because it's basically a dating show about people that are on the spectrum. But beyond that, it's about their families and their support systems as well. And their parents like have become like a very big part of the series. Like the Australian series didn't have much of the parents, though towards the end it did. And then when they moved over to America and they started to do this, the show in America, it became a big component of it. Like not just their parents, but their families, like, you know, like whoever is there in their support system. And the thing that's so lovely about this show is that it doesn't treat these people like they have an ism or a tism or whatever you want to call it. It's a show about people that are dating that happen to have autism or they're on the spectrum. Now, the subjects, like the people that are in the show, don't, like, I mean, if you've ever, like, you know, if you've ever had somebody that's on the spectrum in your life, they are brutally transparent and brutally honest, and they will talk to you about that, and they make sure that that's in the forefront. They don't hide it. There's no shame there, which is amazing. These people that you meet are just wonderful human beings in all of their eccentricities and the way that human beings can be. Like they're lovely and life affirming as they are annoying, as they are funny, as they are weird and strange, but also just normal. And it's like through these, like it's six seasons, or it's actually seven seasons from the Australian to the American version. It's a wonderful, lovely show that you end up getting emotionally attached. Like last night we came home from watching, we watched the drama last night. We went to go see the drama last night, the Zendaya Pattinson movie. And
I want to ask you here, but I'm not going to see it. when we stop recording, I'm going to ask you to spoil that movie for me.
Okay, so. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a wild movie, dude. It is a wild movie. And Pattinson is on this little freak streak that he continues to do. Like, this dude went out and went, Edward, fuck that. I'm going to be this little freak, and you guys are not going to, like, I'm going to get another set of fandom. And he totally did. Like, this movie is, we'll get to it. But, like, that is the anti-version of relationships that are, like, shown on Love on the Spectrum. Like, last night at, like, 10:30 at night when we're finishing the last episode, and these characters do something, like they get back together because they kind of know, like over the course of the thing, they kind of all get to meet. They've met during press tours and stuff. They all get to meet. Dude, like, talk about feels and emotions. I was literally in tears from the moment that they all started to meet together, because like get together back together, because these are like old friends getting back together, and then there's a final moment that they have together that is unscripted but feels scripted, but because you're so deep into the show, you know these characters or these people so well that you know that this is what they do. Uncontrollable, like tears, because it's just so beautiful. Yes. Like I said, it's one of my favorite shows. Like, it is not, it is like literally the anti Bachelor, the anti Real Housewives of whatever it is, because like literally these people are just people existing and they're trying to find love, and they're so just kind of like it. Like, if you watch this show and you can't find, like, and you're single and you can't find at least a little bit of hope in this, that if the social obstacles that are in the way for these people, and they manage to navigate it and just like have an open heart and say, I want to find love, I don't know what you can do. Then you're jaded and cynical, and you just like, you're like, if you can't find a little bit of hope, yeah, and like there's no use for you then. I don't know what to do for you guys. Like, if you can't watch, like if you need a positive streak over a week because you've had a bad week, watch Project Hail Mary, then go on to the two seasons of Jury Duty and Love on the Spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, just it will certainly give you that little spark that right now I think a lot of people need.
Yes, absolutely. And
it's nice to have stuff like that back in, like, on our TV, because
yes, it really is
very, very long, for longer than, like, even with shows like Parks and Rec and The Office that can be like have their like hopeful, sweet, like human moments and give you that little spark. For the most part, those shows are pretty cynical in a lot of ways. And I am a cynical person, so I tend to lean towards that. But that, I think that's what makes something like Jury Duty or Company Retreat land so hard for me, is because I am cynical. And, you know, Project Hail Mary too, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a cynical person who, you know, I don't always want to be, you know, so doom and gloom. So it's nice when something's like, hey man, like, it might just all work out. So, it's been pretty good. You know, pretty good last like 7 to 10 days on that front. I did also watch something else that kind of falls in this. Mm-hmm. I'm much like Company Retreat, I'm hesitant to talk too much about it because I don't know if it's something you're going to watch.
Okay.
I mentioned it a while back. I got a chance to watch Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie.
Yeah, I actually have. Okay, so we will talk about it, but we'll probably have to wait until May, because I have not, like, I have a, I'm getting a screener of the Blu-ray, or the Blu-ray. So I'm kind of waiting until the Blu-ray comes to me in early May. So we'll probably have to talk, wait a month to talk about it. Because I'm kind of a fan of the show that came before it. And
but
I kind of
want... So you've seen the show?
Yes, I've seen the show.
I've never seen the show. So this is a problem. Okay. And so that's what I was going to ask you about.
No, no, like, go ahead.
Are you, like, if you hadn't seen... Because, like, Tim and I, our buddy Tim, like, he was also interested, and he had asked me... before I watched it, he was like, do you think you need to see the show? And I was like, I don't know. All the people I know, like, not know, but all the things I've heard is like, you don't have to have watched the show. And that is kind of true, except it's not. Like, it can be enjoyed without you having watched the show. And unfortunately, the show is not available right now. A24 has the rights, I think, to everything now. And they're going to put out like whole, like a Blu-ray set for the entirety of the show and the movie, which is, I can't wait. I really would like to see the show. I wish I could just stream it, but whatever. You might be able to buy it streaming on Amazon, but... I don't know. I didn't look. I was not going to fork out $30 for a digital version of a show.
No. And also, like, okay, so, like, when I saw the, like, so it felt like if, like everything that I saw from trailers and stuff like that, I know that people have said that you don't need to know the show, but I feel like
there's a lot of things in here. Again, never watched this. I've seen one clip of something where they write a, like, a song to the tune of the, like, music on the Nintendo Wii
or something
like that. I've seen that, which is actually in this movie. And that's what made me realize that, oh, there is so much in this movie that is a callback to other things. You can enjoy it. I mostly did, having not watched the show. But if you had seen all the show and were definitely a fan of the show, it's that thing where, like, it's not fan service necessarily, but... it's just callbacks and references and, like, this is why he's looking at him this way. This is why he's annoyed with him in this way. Like, it's a lot of stuff that would land harder if I had seen the show. And having not seen the show, it feels a little... Like I've missed out on something, because some of the, it's not just jokes that don't land. There are legitimate, like, moments, like heartfelt moments that don't land the way they should, because I haven't spent years with these guys.
And that was what my fear was that, like people are saying, like, you know, reviewers are saying stuff, but they're not getting, it was like,
do you know the premise of the movie?
Yes, I do. Which is a very, it is a very Matt Johnson thing. Like, when you realize, like though the time travel component of it, like how they, like, so the pranking stuff or the things that they're trying to do within the movie, that's a very kind of Nirvana, the show, the band, the show. Like, it's a very kind of like that, like it's a, it's a very weird, like, it's hard to describe the show, which makes me, like, when people were trying to describe the movie.
It's like, a lot like Jury Duty and Company Retreat, yes. Where, like, they have an idea for, like, it's so my understanding, because this is the sort of premise of the movie, too, like, every episode is about, like, they want to start a band and play a show at the Rivoli.
Yes.
And every episode is a scheme about them
trying to
going to get to the Rivoli and yes. play a show because they have never booked it and they don't really even have a band. So the premise of the movie is that, and what they do, like the scheme then becomes like them going out in the real world sometimes and involving other people in it. And it's like, that becomes the like funny stuff is like them improvising things with people who don't know that they're part of a skit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some of that in the movie. It's like very, very small moments. They're really, really funny though. There's some shit in the movie where legitimately do not understand how they accomplished it. I'm wowed by what they've done. It does one of my favorite things, because you know the time travel component, like I feel comfortable talking about this. The show, it weaves in and out of its own history and like is able to incorporate future them, like Back to the Future too.
Yeah.
Like, where it's like you're existing in the timeline of your old thing and interacting in weird ways with something you did years ago. And it's clever cutting, it's clever staging, it's really, really brilliant. It's no surprise that it took them 3 years to make this movie.
I'm gonna suggest a movie to you now that you've seen it. I'm gonna suggest that you watch Matt Johnson's movie Blackberry.
That's what I've heard, is you gotta see the Blackberry movie.
Yes, you like if you even had a passing liking of this and what they're and you're curious about the TV show, or it's like a web TV series, the web series, then I would suggest watching Blackberry, because Blackberry is like, I can only imagine that this is punk rock. That's a symphony. Like, they are true. Like, Matt Johnson is a true filmmaker. Like, I watched that and I went, holy shit. Like, you managed to get I am very iffy on Jay Baruchel. Like, I'm very iffy about Jay Baruchel.
Yeah, sometimes I see him and sometimes I'm like, I really like this guy. And then sometimes I see him and things I'm like, what the hell, man?
This movie convinced me that he's just been misused because filmmakers just don't know how to use him. Because Matt Johnson like kills this. Him and Glenn Howerton in Blackberry. I would love to have a conversation with you. If you watch it, AMC.
I'm gonna watch it this week.
Watch it on AMC and watch the director's cut, or what they call is the director's cut. It's interesting because it's a little bit longer. I preferred that cut. That's the one that I saw the theatrical. I went to see it in the theaters, and then I went to I saw the extended cut on AMC when they brought it out. It's very much like you know how like Quentin brought out the Hateful Eight extended. There's only a few things, but I feel like that's the better cut. It feels like it's a more fuller movie. It feels like it very much feels like. It starts off like you think, oh, this is going to be like Social Network, but then it goes very different and it becomes its own thing. So I definitely would suggest, I'm glad that you got to see, hopefully, the movie.
Hopefully by the time the Blu-ray comes out and you get a chance to sit down and watch it, mm-hmm. I will have managed to find a way to watch some of the series. So that we can kind of have maybe a little bit deeper conversation. Because what I'd like to do is watch the series and go back and
watch the movie. Yeah.
Because I feel like I would get more out of it. I will say this. I'm more in awe of how they made the movie and like the logistics of it than I am of like thinking it's actually a good movie.
Good movie. Yeah, that was the feeling that I had just watching the trailer. I'm like, oh, this is for the fans, but also they made the ultimate fan film? Because, I mean, I had heard that they started making it well before BlackBerry movie. Because, like, they were making that in conjunction, like, he was making, like, the prep work for that movie at that time. So, and then, like, just hearing about it, like, just hearing about what they were planning on attempting to, like, afterwards, like, hearing about what they attempted to do, but not knowing about the footage and not knowing if they pulled it off, because, I mean, there's so many components to filmmaking, right? Was like, I have, like, that's filmmaker dependent. I'm not sure. And this is even before BlackBerry came out. I was like, I'm not sure that they're going to be able to pull off what they're saying that they're going to, they're trying to do with this movie. And
it's impressive. It's more impressive that they achieved what they did than, like, it is as really a movie. Because, I mean, probably rightfully so, it doesn't look great because it's meant to be, you know, a bunch of jackasses filming, you know, nonsense. So it, like, it's not even, I mean, we had a Oscar winning movie shot on a fucking iPhone.
Yep.
But, like, it's not even that level of, like, competency, which is fine. It plays okay. Like, it plays like it's supposed to. But, yeah, it doesn't look great. The sound is off in a lot of places, and that's because you're not filming for sound. Like, it's
supposed yeah, you're to filming
be real worldy.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, you're trying to do, you're doing the thing that, like, how I got into them was very much because, like, I think that it's very much well known in my, like, you know, like, after us podcasting for over 5 years, it's very well known that I'm a huge, like, fan of Jackass and that kind of, and that specific kind of style of it's not filmmaking, but it's like that kind of skate, like, it comes from my love of skateboarding films. Like, when I was a yeah. kid, like, you know, the Pal Peralta, like the Tony Hawk stuff, right? And Pal Peralta stuff. Like the Skull and Crossbones, whatever you wanted to call it, the TNC stuff, like all of the skateboarding videos, right? Gleaming the Cube. It all came from that love of when I was a kid in the 80s. You watched those videos, right? And they were like, they were punk rock. And so it naturally evolved whenever somebody made something with a certain amount of skill and wit that I would naturally be drawn to it. And that was something because they're about our age. And the yeah. humor was kind of like only guys our age. I mean, you know, like it makes me smile because I like when I heard that they were making the movie and it was like a time travel movie. I'm like, only fucking guys our age would like Grabinski with Mike, Nick and Alice.
Yeah, it is weird how much time travel we've done
recently.
Not even 4 months into the year, like,
yeah,
time travel seems to be like heavy on people's minds.
Absolutely. no absolutely. And I mean, there's a, like, come on, let's be honest,
there's a good reason for it.
Yeah but I mean, it's also like it's weaponized in a really weird way. Like, it's like it took the whole thing of, I know why it is. It's because we all know, because Back to the Future 2 became a polemic thing for all of us, especially because of Biff when the paradox happens. And it became this, like, yeah. It's become this fucking thing for all of us,
all
right?
All the things we thought we were going to get from Back to the Future 2, and all we got was Biff.
Yeah, we literally just got Biff. We, like, no hoverboard, no power laces,
no holographic movies.
No Jaws 19, directed by Max Spielberg. None of that shit.
Self-drying jacket.
No flying cars. No nothing like that. No dehydrated pizza. Nothing. No garden. No aerial garden. Like, no, yeah. Like, nothing like that. Like, we got nothing. No, like, I mean, well, we got the collagen de-aging that didn't turn anybody into, like, de-aging, like, yeah. Like, turned them into monsters. But, I mean, we got the worst things from, like, I mean, even so much, like, like the way that we've eaten ourselves with, like, you know, fandom and like, you know, like what a like, you know, like eating, like, you know, eating our own culture and recycling culture is literally like the worst part about like the future and Back to Future too, right?
Yeah, cafe 80s, man.
Like, you know, now it's cafe 90s and shit.
Yeah,
but it's funny because they're using it so differently. Like, they're not doing a one-to-one for Back to the Future. They're using that concept of time travel is bad and I need to go and correct it as a trope. Like, yeah. And like, or that, like, you know, like, it's wildly fun to see how people are using time travel again, but not for the purposes that we ultimately think. Like, and then also, like, you know, it, I mean, Endgame was a time travel movie, right? So, like, we got, we like, you know, that's been a reference for a while, too. So, it's a lot of fun. Like, I'm actually, you telling me that, like, makes me really look forward to watching the movie, you know, and being able to deep dive back into it. I will look for you. I think I know where you can find the show, and I'll point you into that direction.
Okay. Yeah, it would be nice to see.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I'm now, like I said, I'm now excited just because you've kind of given me a, like, you know, like, oh, okay, it is for the fans. Which I kind of knew that it was. So, but okay. All right. Anything like, are you watching anything else?
Invincible is back.
Yes, I did see that. I've not watched it at all.
It's a little slow going.
That's why, like, I've heard the reviews are not good.
The show really needs a tighter edit, man. Like, every episode has been like 45 to 50 minutes long, and it needs to move. Like, this is supposed to be an action heavy show, and once you get to the action, it really, really does work, but it takes a long time in every episode to get to that. I feel like I'm watching Dragon Ball Z.
It's like
constantly,
man,
talking about what's going to happen. And it's just like, I just want to see them punch each other. Not much to talk about there. I also finished Ponies, but I talked about starting Ponies.
Yes, you did.
It's good. I wound up not loving it. Like, they're great. The two leads, they're both fantastic. Ultimately, it just fell into like the cliche kind of spy stuff that I feel like we've seen plenty of places. It's just that this is set in that specific era. So you kind of like get the fun of like, oh, it's all these 80s songs that I love.
Mm.
The one thing I do want to like, sort of shit on the idea of RJ Decker being this like corporate or network, not corporate, network knockoff of a show that you turned me onto, Bad Monkey, that we both really love. And that's not completely wrong, but we dove into RJ Decker and it's a lot of fun, man.
Okay. All right. I mean, it looks like bad Carl Hassan, and I'm okay. Like, I love Carl Hassan just because of his hatred for Florida. Like, his like weird kind of like hatred.
It's a love-hate thing. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I fucking hate this place. Why don't you leave? Like, but it's Florida.
It's my home. the weather's good. Like true Californians, like, that's the thing, is that they'll complain and bitch and moan about it. Like, you know, it's too expensive, yada, yada, yada. But then they're like, well, then fucking leave. Like, real Californians will be like, then fucking leave. If you're a transplant and you don't like it, leave. Get the fuck out of here. Stop making our lives miserable as a transplant. And they're like, but the weather. And it's like, yeah, you fucking, then shut the fuck up. But like, Carl Hassan is like that with Florida. Like, I love that about him, is that he's like, he's got that love hate thing. It's like, but it's my home and I love gators and I love the wildness of it. And it's just like, okay, well, okay. That conflicted feeling is always a lot of fun, because, I mean, it's like in all things, right? Like, it's a little bit of truth. Like, it feels more truthful when somebody hates, like, has that love-hate relationship with the place that they live in. So yeah, no, I want to get to that. And then what's the other one? High functioning, the one with Caitlin from
I Sweet don't watch D. that one. Stephanie does. She really, really likes that show. Okay. I haven't watched it though. It looked up my alley. I just, like, at the time I was like, I don't know. And then now it's like two seasons in and I'm like, that's a lot to catch up on. So RJ Decker, just, I don't know how Scott Speedman wasn't a bigger star.
I mean,
not that he's past his prime, or, but I mean, in that range of like Chris Evans and like,
yeah,
I think he's at least as good as Chris Evans. Like, I don't think he could have played Captain America, but there's just something about the guy. He's just such a lovable kind of loser type. And
well, I mean, yeah,
he's like just good looking enough, like, to be annoying, you know? It's not like overtly like Chris Hemsworth, like handsome, but it is like, you're so good looking without trying. It's fucking annoying because he is like kind of this hapless loser on the show. His life kind of the premise is his life kind of falls apart. Like, his wife divorced him. And he was a reporter at this paper and something happened and he was like at the end of his rope and he caught this kid breaking into his car. And because he had like an informant or something that got killed. And because he was so like at the end of his rope, when he caught this kid breaking into his car, he beat the shit out of him, which is like not who he is. And like, his wife is in the show. They're still like really close. And she's now in a relationship with this police detective woman.
Of course.
It's a whole like, she's bisexual, and there's some really like off color jokes like in the first episode that I'm like, oh, I can't believe they're saying this, but it's funny. And what happens is, so he winds up going to prison for 3 years for beating this kid up.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Okay.
And there's like a bunch of other stuff. He gets out of prison. He's trying to put his life back together. He decides to become a PI for some fucking reason. And because I guess that as a reporter, that was his favorite thing, like investigating stuff, taking pictures, all that stuff. And so he's going to try to use that and become a PI. Is never going that well because he's not really that good at the job. He's good at like investigating things. And
okay.
He's just not very good at being. He's actually a good person. That's the problem. He's not.
Oh, he's just not a scumbag like most private detectives so, are. Okay.
In line with our. Like, maybe this is the difference between it and Bad Monkey. Like, not that Vince Vaughn's character was a bad person, but he's very cynical. And RJ Decker is not a cynical person. Like, he's very, like, overall just sweet and nice. Like, he will be confrontational, but he's not cynical. And so that's kind of his downfall as a PI. But it is kind of fun to watch him dig himself into holes and then have to figure a way out. You are like rooting for this guy and not in a like, he's an asshole, but I'm rooting for him. You're rooting for him very much in a way that, and that's what happens with his ex-wife's girlfriend. She's a police detective and she doesn't like him.
Oh,
she hates that. Like, they're still kind of close, but like it eventually gets explained that like, hey, we were friends before we got married. We should have never gotten married. We should have always just been friends who like maybe hooked up
every once in a while. Like, yeah, like, okay.
That should have been the end of that. And it wasn't. We tried to make it something it wasn't. I still really care for him. His life got fucked up because I just dipped out because I started seeing you and you don't like him. And so what happens is through him being a PI and like trying to like use his sort of in with this real police detective, mm-hmm. they wind up becoming friends. And she kind of like begins to see him not as like the ex-husband who you have to hate and more of like, oh yeah, he's kind of just this affable loser that like you can't help but root for. The cases are really fun. It's very case of the week kind of
very Columbo thing. Yeah.
It feels a lot Rockford. Like, yeah. It actually feels a lot like, the two brothers, Simon and Simon.
Okay.
Only with just one guy or one guy and a police detective, not brothers, but it or maybe a little Magnum PI ish since it's Florida and that was Hawaii,
No. I get it. The exotic locale that's so tied to the show because, you know, Magnum, like, you know, Hawaii was a big component of that show. And everything that's involved in Hawaii.
And the show, it much like Bad Monkey, it is like Florida is a character on the show. And they lean into the like, this shit only happens in Florida. Like so many things he gets involved in. It's just like, and it's funny because Stephanie's from Florida and she has those Florida stories. So with almost without fail, she's like, yeah, that's some Florida shit right there. It is a really good watch. Like it's kind of a nice hangout TV show. Like it's not going to get sappy or overly emotional. Things are going to be resolved by the end of the episode. Like you kind of know who did it from the jump. Like there's nothing to figure out, but it is kind of just fun to sit down and watch something that isn't gonna like beat you over the head with either cynicism or emotion in some way, shape, or form, but still, you know, walk away feeling like, well, that was good. And like, I love Scott Speedman. It will always amaze me that he wasn't like the star, like, what's his name from Fast and the Furious, like, who. You know, everybody post his death. It's like,
oh, Paul Walker. He
was, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I like Paul Walker, but like he did seem to be a bigger like star. And who knows what would have happened if he'd have lived. But I don't understand why Scott Speedman isn't on at least a Paul Walker level, you know, but like maybe he's just choosy about his projects. Like also, good for him.
But also like, think about like, like, so the two movies he was involved with were like the two big budget movies were not about him. They were about Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah.
and literally he was the man, like, you know, remember that, like back in that era, like it was either they couldn't have both a male lead and a female lead that were like, they never figured out like the low budget movies, the writing went out the wall, like went out the fucking window. And I think that it was just because his character in those two Underworld movies that he's in is terribly written, as bad, if not worse, than the Kate Beckinsale's character in those movies.
Yeah, he is giving, especially both Underworlds, like he's given nothing to do, to the point like I remember watching Underworld and being like, why aren't they doing more with him? And then spoilers for Underworld, like when he becomes like the whatever they call it, it's like, yeah, really, like y'all should have been doing more with it. A, he's a pretty good actor. B, like fucking look at that dude, man.
Yep. No, absolutely.
he He was on Grey's Anatomy for a few years. It was after I had stopped watching Grey's Anatomy, but I think he was on like 3 or 4 years of that show. But of course he was. He's a really handsome dude who probably looks great in a fucking doctor's coat. So why wouldn't he have been on Grey's Anatomy for 3 or 4 years? So.
Correct. Like I, it's wild to me to think that, he was also a part of a, like that was a tough going, right? Because if you weren't on the level of, say, like his era is, if you're not Heath Ledger or Brad Pitt,
yeah,
get the fuck out of the way. Because yeah. I think that we all, thinking about it,
that same thing. Like, he doesn't have, he can't get over the way Brad Pitt does, but he does have that same kind of quality to me.
He does. It's unfortunately, at that point, it's like, unless you're like that or Clooney.
Already have a Brad Pitt. We don't need you.
It's not like now where everybody is an MCU actor. So everybody gets their shot at 3 or 4 movies.
I would fucking love to have Scott Speedman in the MCU, man.
Dude, he would have been honest, a
good Winter Soldier.
Actually, I was thinking he would have been a great, he would have been a great Star-Lord.
Yeah, oh fuck yeah.
He would have been you know what his Star-Lord would have been? His Star-Lord would have been Harrison Ford's interpretation of Star-Lord.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Less jokey and less weird creepo and more kind of right in the middle of this dude's kind of dangerous. I think that people forget about Han Solo. The first iteration of Han Solo is that, he's kind of a dick, and he kind of would rather not. The only reason why he's involved with these two crazies is that he needs the money. And then when the shit gets over, my favorite part, because I recently was rewatching it for the 1,000th time, was I was thinking about it. I'm like, he only cares about the fact that he needs to get out of there, because if he knew he could sell them to the Empire and get away, he would. But because of the fact that he's a drug dealer or he's a drug smuggler, and the Empire does not look kindly to the drug smugglers, he's forced to deal with these people.
Yep.
It's
because he cannot profit off of and then he just gets sucked into their nonsense, essentially because he starts crushing on a girl.
Yeah, so. An underage girl at that. I was like, there's a reason why they jump ahead. They make sure that they don't say it, but they jump ahead 2 years with Leia because she's 16 in the first movie, and then in the second movie she's just old enough. He's a complete scumbag, but not here to talk the politics of Star Wars that that's there in plain open sight if you really want to see it. But
it's not as bad as Indiana Jones.
No, it's not. They don't have an actual record of Spielberg and Lucas talking to Lawrence Kasdan saying what they said. And if you guys don't know what we're talking about, look it up. Look up script development, Raiders of the Lost Ark, PDF.
It will make you sad.
It will make you cringe.
And be like, oh shit. Even the people that I think aren't inclined to shit like that are kind of just okay with it sometimes.
Yeah. So. It makes you we always looked over. Now that line, I was a child, I was in love, it was wrong, and you knew it. Literally is, it went from a speed bump to literally a speed trap.
Yeah, whoa, wait. What? So no, she actually was a child. Not just I was 18 and young and dumb and you took him. This was oh no, she was an actual child.
Yeah. So. And then the whole thing was Harrison Ford, the indie response to it. It was 1929. That's literally response to it. But it's wild because it's written in the, I cannot get over that.
It's kind of mind blowing. And thinking about it will ruin those movies.
Yes. Thinking about it too much, you're like, oh man, Lucas and Spielberg, you know what it was? Lucas and Spielberg were influenced way too much by De Palma and Scorsese and Coppola, because that's the kind of shit that Scorsese would have done in a movie. And it was almost like when you read it, it's almost like you want to hear them at some point say, you know, Marty would really like this, or Brian probably would find this as a funny thing. Even though it's so wrong of them to say that kind of shit.
You watch Taxi Driver, and the first time I watched Taxi Driver, I was like, please don't have them hook up.
Yeah.
Please don't have them hook up. Because that is some Scorsese shit.
You're telling me, man. It doesn't surprise me, but it disappoints me. It disappoints me because it's like, that's one of my favorite movies of all time. And now I have to kind of just go, okay, well, I guess. Yeah. I guess. Oh, fuck. But anywho, Scott Speedman, I will check it out because I do really want, I kind of love those. I mean, you know me, I love the Rockford File lovable, it's loser right detective.
It's right there with that. It is a perfect fill-in for stuff like that. It doesn't feel as procedural and kind of like cookie cutter as something like the CSIs or the Criminal Minds, because you do kind of just fall in love with this character. So it does become more about watching him kind of go through the paces of things, and less about I want to see him solve a crime, because he's kind of ahead of him on most of the things. So, and mostly because there haven't been any huge guest stars, but almost without fail, every episode has one of the actors where you're just like, oh, I know this guy. He's one of those guys. And so every fucking time it's like, oh, well, that's the bad guy, because I recognize his face, even though I don't know his name. So, it's a lot of fun. It's nice to be able to have say I'm watching Scott Speedman every week because I love Scott Speedman, and I don't have to watch Grey's Anatomy, so that's real nice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there The Simpsons, there's fucking 85,000 seasons. I mean, come on.
They broke up Callie and that, shit, now I can't remember their names, but I remember, I think I tweeted it. I was like, Arizona, if they break up Callie in Arizona, I'm not watching this show anymore. Like, literally 3 weeks later, they broke them up, and I was like, okay, I'm fucking done.
It's literally we talked about, it's literally a soap opera. It's a revolving door of drama, and eventually they have to it's I'm just shocked that Ellen Pompeo is still on the show.
So I don't watch the show, I said, it's delightful watching her just be Queen Bee in the Bee-est sense, and more power to her. She's just comes and goes as she pleases with the show.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is I can just leave. I don't need to keep doing this, but they need her more than she needs them. So everybody just kind of works around her schedule, and it's kind of funny. I also that, several times over the last 10 or 15 years, they've had directors come in to direct episodes who were not the greatest with the cast and crew. And she has never, she does not fucking mince words with that stuff.
Nope.
She's we have to be together. You're a tourist. Do not come in here and treat us like we're supposed to be bowing to you. You are here, to just play for a little while. This is a fucking family. Like, I kind of love her, like, just attitude about everything. And it makes me laugh.
Well, and what I love is that she tried to go away. The ratings dipped and they had to bring her back. Like, there was like 2 years where she was like guesting because she was directing and producing. Yeah. Like, and then they were like, I mean, I know enough because of the fact that it's like, you know, it's a pretty big thing. Right. Yeah. Like,
anytime anything happens behind the scenes on Grey's Anatomy, it fucking makes Variety headlines.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, and it's so like, it fosters a lot of like actors and like, you know, you kind of have to like, you have to be kind of like, I don't know, like it has to feel like.
That's part of the reason that I watched that show was because kept watching the show. I really enjoyed all of the actors.
Like, yeah.
Patrick Dempsey, Eric Dane, Ellen Pompeo, the guy that played George.
T.R. Knight.
Now I'm drawing a blank on all their
names. Justin Chambers, Catherine Heigl, yeah. Sandra Oh. I mean, Sandra
yeah.
Oh.
Sandra Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. I love Sandra Oh. She was in there for a decade. She was in there for like 10 or 11 seasons. Like, but also like, I'm all like the stupid Ryan Murphy show, Reno 911 or 911 and whatever else, like going into space, whatever bullshit. I'm all for that because it gives cast and crews shows that they can work on and like literally raise a family on. Right. Yeah, because like,
yeah, absolutely.
Like they can literally make a career out of, I'm not like, I used to look down on those things like when I was a kid, but then now like I look at it and I'm like, you know what? I don't care that Angela Bassett is on like 7 911 shows. And like, but she's making her bag. I'm all for that. You know why? Because she deserves it. She doesn't deserve to hustle the way that she has to. Like all these guys, like the reason why these people take these roles now is because it's a guaranteed paycheck, especially on a Ryan Murphy show.
Even if they have to like move to Carolina or wherever they're going to film for 4 months out of the year, it's stable. It's not like, okay, well, I got to go shoot in Prague, and now I got to go shoot in London. Now I got to go shoot in Australia, and now I got to... It is, like, consistent paycheck, consistent location. It, like you said, it lets them create stability, you know, with a family.
And exactly.
Instead of constantly, you know, being on the go. So, yeah, it's, you know, like, I might not watch them, but, like, I don't ever, you know...
I don't care. I like, yeah, I don't.
Usually I it's because I don't want to get invested in something else.
So. Yeah, I mean, there's already enough to watch, right? Like, I mean, well, it's like the Ryan Murphy universe. There's like seven shows. The Chicago shows. That's like an Avengers level, like style complexity.
I love Rob Lowe. Yeah. But like, I'm just like, I can't.
Nashville.
Peter, he was on the first, like,
Peter Krause. Like, yeah, he was in one of my favorite shows.
Sports Night?
No, Sports Night and also, the Funeral Parlor show.
Oh, yeah. I have never seen that.
I need to watch it. Oh, my God. That one is. Like, if you think that, rough. I haven't
watched it. It's because of, I've heard that, like, oh no, that will destroy you.
Josh
Charles is the only Best Medicine. Like, I started watching that because I love Sports Night. I love Josh Charles. I'm going to try this show.
Like, literally, why have we not? Why have we not had
Aaron Sorkin? Hello.
Yes.
You're making a fucking sequel to
the Social Network.
Yeah.
With a different cast.
You cannot manage to wrangle like all of these people together and give us a little bit more Sports Night. Just a little bit.
I mean, like, the thing is, you could literally, like, you didn't even have to do a sequel. You can do a remake of Sports Night, and it would still be relevant because we still have sports shows on ESPN. I mean, like, it's my favorite
sports
thing.
Sports Night's one of the best fucking shows. And it sucks because literally it stopped existing because they were like, well, we'll give you the money for West Wing or we'll give you the money for Sports Night, but we're not going to do both.
Both.
And he chose West Wing and eventually left West Wing. But, I know people love the West Wing, so it's hard to.
But also, like,
Sports Night was so fucking good.
It was. Well, also, like, he was forced to leave West Wing because of cocaine. I mean, like, let's be honest. Like, I love the fact that, like, he had it all, right? Like, he had the wife with Kristen Chenoweth. He had the fucking, he had the shows, the Oscars, the Emmys. And then we come to find out the reason why he had all that shit, except for Kristen Chenoweth, because cocaine.
Cocaine.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug. It was before AI, before Taylor Sheridan was making shows with AI.
I mean, yeah.
Cocaine.
Yeah.
Cocaine.
All right. So enough about that. Let's spend 45 minutes trashing something.
Oh, my God.
All right. If you like the Super Mario Brothers Galaxy movie, maybe don't listen to the rest of this podcast.
Yes. Friend of the show, Tim, just turn it off. Turn it off. Turn it off. Let's start with this. You texted me because I texted you about an incident that happened in my theater, and I just texted you the incident. I didn't tell you what I thought about the movie or anything because I didn't want to inform on you what I thought about the movie. But then you said something to me about, you know, friend of the show Tim, about how he lost, like, he's been talking nonstop. I didn't want to elaborate further, but I literally told you, I was like, oh, well, that's great for him. Because, like, so is this made for video gamers? Because I pride myself on being a gamer.
Who the fuck this movie is made for?
I don't know
who this is for. I don't know what the movie's supposed to be. I'll start with a little bit of positive because most of this is going to be negative.
Yeah.
Okay. It's really pretty.
Yes, it is. Like, it's beautiful.
The animation is very good.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's only been a couple of years since the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this feels like it did come together really, really quick, which also shows in the fucking story because there is no story.
No story, no.
But, like, they did a hell of a job. There's a lot of really fun visual gags there.
And the complexity, right? Like, the whole casino scene is like
there's so much going on.
It's such a there's a depth to that scene that's beyond just, like fun, like, complex, like, Inception style, like, visuals, right? Like, how it happens.
It's
with, like,
the one time in the movie that they actually do. So part of the reason I can't play Mario Galaxy is because of, like, that 3D where you, like,
dizziness
move around. Yeah. I can't do it. It throws me. And the one time in this movie that they actually use that to, as an effect, is in the casino scene where, like, everything is up and everything is down, and, like, you just walk up the walls and the camera reorients, and, like, it's really impressive.
Yeah.
There's so much going on in that scene that, like, animation wise, it's like, that's pretty fucking impressive. That's it, though. Like,
Yeah.
I think the Fox McCloud intro where he talks about his team is fun for, like, 30 seconds.
Seconds it is, there. Yeah.
That, I was like, well, fuck this movie. I want to see that movie. like, and none of those people are in this movie. Like, what the fuck was the point of even talking about it? Like,
it's an advert. It's a preview for the Star Fox movie. Like, because, like, I literally mean, the mid credit sequence. Okay, so like that's the only time this movie lives up to anything. And it's when Glenn Powell is basically playing his character from Top Gun as Fox McCloud.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally it. It's like, it's literally like the action scene he has, and the two action scenes he has, and then the end credit sequence, which you're like, oh, so it's not a Wario kind of like end credit sequence. It's nothing like that, right? It's literally like, there's nothing that tells you about what the next movie is going to be. It's just literally like, oh, we're going to give you a preview for what we're probably planning on doing next with the next movie that's not in the Wario movie. We're just like, you know, advertisement for the next. Like, this is just a giant advertisement. Like, yeah, I hate saying that, but it is.
So, our animated Mario Brothers came in form of a half-hour television show. Yes. That we got hosted by one Captain Lou Albano.
As Mario. I still cannot believe that.
Insane.
This
felt like a 90-minute fucking version of one of those shows.
Yes.
Which are inane and just really exist to sell another product. Because every episode was the same as the previous episode. And why the fuck? I get the Donald Glover campaign to play Yoshi. Fine. Like, I'm all for him doing his Vin Diesel walking in the booth and just going, Yoshi!
Yeah.
Like, that's totally cool. But how do you not give him I called it, when Steph and I talked about it, I called it a Silent Bob moment where the man says nothing the whole fucking movie and then just drops knowledge for, like, a minute and a half.
Yes.
And you're like, oh shit, that was one of the best scenes in the movie. How do you not do that with Donald Glover? And it doesn't even have to be like some super emotional, important scene. You could have just given him like some kind of like rap, you know?
Anything, but you didn't. Well, it's like, so, okay. Like the nicest way I can put this is that this is a movie that is low stakes to the point of no stakes. This is a movie that like basically is the equivalent of background noise, which I mean, okay. Like if I like as much as I didn't like the first movie, at least the first movie had some stakes.
There's a story.
Story? Yeah. This movie is nothing. This is just going from world to world. Like, but then, okay, so like, here's the thing. This movie is, for me, and like, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, but it feels like a Mario game where you travel from, like, this really, like, I know that you didn't play Mario Galaxy, but you've played other Mario games where you're going off to different worlds. This feels like a Mario game where literally, like, Mario games are, like, what I think a lot of people love about Mario games is that they are low stakes. There's not a lot of, like, anything oomph to them, right? Like, nothing bad truly happens other than they kidnap a princess. That's it.
You do get into the game. Like, I could not get into this movie.
No.
At any point in time.
But also, I feel like, this movie really felt like, for the first time, I felt like Illumination went hard into, like, seven-year-old world. Like seven-year-olds. Because everything is cute.
Do you think it's Illumination, or do you think it's Nintendo, like, not Shigura? Letting them take chances with stuff?
Miyamoto? Miyamoto?
I mean, it could be a little bit of both, I guess.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that they are both... I think that their both worst instincts are coming out. Because, like, here's the thing, is that as much as people can talk shit about those Minion movies have an attitude. and have like they have the barest of stories.
Minions and Monsters trailer did kind of like.
Yeah, I mean, Universal, like Universal horror movies, like, you know, last week we were talking about the Mummy, the Mummy crew being in 1950s Hollywood. They basically stole our fucking idea.
I know, right?
Like it literally, I was like, oh, so they're basically doing what we
wanted. That was the first time I'd seen that trailer.
And no, it's the first time too.
Me and Adam just talked about it.
I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm always in the bag for those movies because I like the first one, right? Like, I really like Despicable Me. Like, but it also has a story. It has an attitude. It's kind of like this sweet and sour. Like, Mario doesn't have any sweet and sour. It just has all sweet. But also, like, some of the sour that it has is so wrongly headed. Like the Mario stuff.
The Bowser Jr. stuff didn't work for me.
No.
The Mario and the antagonistic Mario with little mini Bowser.
Yeah.
Like, as little a part of the movie as that was, like, it just didn't do much.
It also annoyed me.
Why? Like, we have our feelings about Chris Pratt. Mostly, yeah. I just am nothing to Chris. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's whatever. But, I don't think he has 10 minutes of dialogue in this movie.
He doesn't, like, well, I think...
Neither does Luigi.
No, like, and that's the thing, is that Charlie Day is a motor mouth that you want him to be talking constantly.
He should just never stop talking.
Yes. But he doesn't, and, like, they literally have, like, one scene at the beginning. They meet Yoshi... And then that's it.
That is the only truly like competent story. Like there's a miniature story there. There's dialogue. Like that 3.5 minutes is the only part of the movie that feels like it was made by people that understand how to make a narrative.
And also that know what a Mario game is, and also what a Mario movie should be.
Yeah.
And then it all just becomes these things about like that's why I asked, like, who is this for? Is this for gamers? Is this for kids? Is it a combination of both? Like, but not just gamers, but hardcore gamers. Like guys that want their princesses like Rosalinda that don't do anything.
You're building this backstory of like her and Peach are sisters and they're separated, but like it feels so fucking shoehorned into this that like, if that were the story, okay. If it were like explore, like it's because they get back to Mushroom Kingdom. It's Peach's birthday, and she's sad because like it's her birthday. She it's not even her real birthday. She doesn't know when her birthday is. Like it's. That feels like it's going to be something, but then like the adventure she goes off on isn't because she's searching, even though she finds her past that way. It isn't because she's searching for her past. It's because she accidentally just trips into it without knowing that that's what she was going for.
Right. Like it makes, it's such a,
you don't fucking understand story. I'm baffled at the, again, I'm with you. I didn't like, I wasn't so positive on the first one, but I did have a good time. Like I even rewatched it a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
In preparation for this. Cause like Bowser's fun in that movie.
Yeah.
Luigi's fun. The fucking stressy, depressy star in the thing that, well, actually that's the other part of the movie that really was good, was the very end when
he comes
specific
back.
Star, I was like, I saw all the stars. I thought we were going to get like a whole bunch of that weird shit.
Nope. No,
they're just all little kids. Little children.
Yeah.
And like, that's fine. Except the one fucking star that we had seen before this was like, was Wednesday Addams, you know? And like, so you think they're all going to have these like weird, quirky personalities, and they're just nothing.
No, not at all. Like it's just, it's almost like they, like, either A, they needed, like, another year of development, which it's three. Okay, so, like, this movie is officially, like, was in development before the first movie came out. So right. They were writing the script. They knew what they needed to do. But this feels like it's a year off from being ready, which should not be the case. You should have been developing this, and maybe that's the thing, is that they were developing it side by side and they just felt like, oh, well, you know, we've already set the world up. It's, we can just play.
Yeah, it's a whole, like, we don't know what's going to work. We don't know. So
because
you,
like,
don't have something to lean into other than Yoshi. And really, like, Yoshi's one of my favorite, if not my favorite Mario character, one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
You did nothing with Yoshi.
Nope. Like, well, okay, and then, okay, so, like, the most egregious thing to me, the thing that basically made me go, fuck you, is the best part, the thing that got you your fucking Academy Award nomination.
You build up to it and then nothing.
Nothing. You don't have Jack Black do a song? Are you fucking kidding me? You have a moment, even if you do.
Where he's like in the, like, prison thing.
Yes.
And he's like, yeah, I was spurned. I was left at the, and, like, you're building up to it. And, like, the music starts to swell. And then you're just like, nah, just kidding. What?
Like, no, I'm sorry. Or even if you had just done just the two of us between Bowser Jr. and Bowser?
Yeah.
Fine. Something. But you have Jack Black and you don't, like, he's literally Mr. Video Game now. He's been in four video game adaptations when you talk about Minecraft movie, Mario Brothers movie, Borderlands, and now Mario Galaxy, the movie.
Yeah.
Like, in every single one of those movies, other than this movie, he's sung. He's known to do that, right? Like, that's his thing. That's his shtick. It's like they didn't learn any lessons, and they just dived into, like, oh, well, we know what's best, and so let's do it. And, like, I don't know, man. Like, I just look at it and I go, who the fuck is this movie for? Like, yeah. Like, it may be, like, I mean, it made close to $400 million worldwide over the weekend. I just started to see the numbers. $400 million, like, and it's going to make more than the original one did. So we're going to get, I mean, Nintendo now is poised to have, and it, like, to be perfectly honest, after this movie, you know, the thing that I thought about when I walked out, I'm genuinely scared of what the Zelda live action movie is going to be. Like, just genuinely scared, because is there going to be a story? Is there going to be anything other than just whatever they think that they, like, I mean, like, I don't know, because who knows? Maybe maybe the fact that Nintendo is so worried about Zelda that they put all their chips, and, like, Mario Galaxy was an afterthought, and they just let Illumination do whatever, or they were like, yeah, let's just move now. And they really needed another year to really set things up. I don't know. Or it was already in motion, right? Like, because the Yoshi thing is the last thing that we see in the movie, and it becomes a thing. But also, you have another princess, which, what? Why do you have Rosalia in the movie? Like, it is such a weird hobgoblin of a fucking movie. Like, people make fun of the Super Mario Brothers movie from 92.
It's at least trying to do something.
Like, yes,
this movie is afraid to, it feels or like 93. It's afraid to do anything because it doesn't want to piss off fans.
No.
And, like, I don't know. Like, oh, yo, we can't have Yoshi say too much because fans will get pissed because we had Yoshi talk, or, you know, we can't have this or this or that. Like, it's just, I don't, it's bad. It's just bad. And it's so sad because I felt like we were on pretty good run. Like Borderlands, I guess aside, I still have never seen Borderlands, but I still haven't seen Minecraft. But like by all accounts, Minecraft is at least a fun time.
It is a fun time. Like I think that you'll enjoy it. Like it's as long as you like the characters. Yeah, like
good solid video game adaptations, and this feels like a giant step backwards. To like doesn't matter because it's made a shit ton of money, so it don't, but just quality wise and like competency wise, it just feels like a step backwards of like, oh well, now we can just fucking give them any old slop, they'll just eat it up, we don't have to make anything that's actually you know, a film, we don't have to invest in the story, like we just gotta make references, you know.
Yeah,
and that's not, I don't know, like the references are fun, but when that's all that there is, that's just bad. And some of the stuff, it's like, it's for, like, there are things in this movie that I know are specifically for, like, our age group, like the Game & Watch thing, the dude at the end, like, the fucking 6-year-olds don't know who that is.
Rob.
The Robbie, whatever, the robot thing.
Yeah.
They don't, like, that joke is funny to kids, but it's funnier when you're fucking 45 or 48 or what, and you're like, oh no, I actually know what that thing is and how fucking annoying it was. Like, that's funny, but like, that's all that's there. There's nothing else there.
The scope, and the Nintendo scope gun. Like, it's like, okay. Like, it's all like, it's Family Guy filmmaking. Remember this? Remember this? Like that's not funny to me. Like, that's not funny or fun, or that's not storytelling.
Something is not storytelling, and it's not really a joke. Like, it's a fun visual, like, gag Easter egg thing, but that's not, you got to have more than that, man. Like, I need something more than that.
Yep.
Like, I don't know that I would have loved a straight up, like, Princess Peach focused movie about her, like, exploring and trying to find out her past, but it would have been at least a narrative and more interesting than this. I still might have walked out going like, yeah, I didn't really care about Princess Peach's past. But that would have been something. You know, that was the one, like, emotional kind of thing beat that the movie tried to do. And it just did it so haphazardly that it didn't fucking matter. Like, never mind, like, getting into the logistics of, like, how all that stuff works. It's fine. It's whatever. It's a Mario. And I did wish that they had, because it is a Mario Brothers movie. Why isn't there more about, like, do they just not go back to their world anymore? They just live in the world?
Well, okay, so that's the thing that, like,
the first movie ends
with them back in the non-Mario Brooklyn, world.
Wherever. Brooklyn,
yeah. Like, that's the thing that, like also, like, the visual gag of, like, Yoshi, and then he gets chased out, and it's like, what? Like, it's a very...
That Yoshi scene was... I actually think that was a lot of fun. Like, him going through, like, our world, essentially.
Yeah.
And, like, randomly eating things. And, like, when he eats the dog. And the, like, that's fun and cute. But, like, literally, you set up Yoshi being in our world. And then retcon all of it in, like, 30 or 40 seconds. So that you don't have to go back to our world. That doesn't make any fucking sense, man.
Like, no, it doesn't.
Why did you have him in our world to begin with?
Yep. No, you were preaching to the choir, because, like, I did not understand. Like, it was just baffling to me. Like, everything was baffling to me. Like, it was just literally going, huh, what? I don't understand this. Like, every choice is designed to be, it feels like it's designed to like, satisfy, like, fandom, but also, like, it does nothing story-wise. Like, it's narratively inert. And I just don't get it. Like, I don't get anything. Like even, like, okay, so Mario and Luigi and Yoshi are trying to get to the princess, right? There's a huge plot gap where I'm like, what? Where they go, how did they know to go to the galaxy planet?
I don't fucking, like,
they all of a sudden know. They,
like, so much of this movie happens just because all of the characters didn't stay in one place. Because they're all just right behind each other.
Yep.
Every step of the way. Like, if Peach stays where she is instead of chasing after the star, like, jumping through the portals or whatever, fucking Bowser Jr. shows up. Like, with Rosalina, whatever her name is. Like, he shows up. Like, his ship fucking shows up. Like, I'm like, all you had to do was stay. Like, you go chasing to try to rescue her, and she just shows up at your fucking doorstep. Like, y'all are all just chasing your own tails, which is beyond fucking frustrating.
Oh, yeah. No. Like, it is, like, it's just, like I said, like, the nicest thing I can say about it is that it is visually impressive. I watched it in 3D and I was like, wow, this is like beautifully mounted. And there was thought behind every design that correlates to the Mario Galaxy video games. Like, so much so, like, afterwards I was like, you know what? I want to play those. Like, I'm going to buy the, like, I just bought the two pack, the Mario Galaxy 2-pack from Switch, for the Switch, because yeah. I want to play them again. Because I remembered, like, loving those games. Like, really loving those games and playing those games. Like they were impressive to me. But other than that, and maybe that's it, is that it feels like, as crass as, like, in the crassest moments, it feels like an advertisement for, like, it feels like what people say sometimes movies are, which are advertisements for toys. Which I don't feel that most times, but this time I felt like every single time they wanted to, like, if they brought out the scope again, I would not be surprised, looking exactly like it looked in the game or in the movie. Yeah. Because they want to sell things. Like, everything, like, I looked online and every single character has some kind of tchotchke or toy or representation for that you can buy. So, like, yeah, literally, this is a giant advertisement for the entirety of, like, Nintendo's line, which makes me so mad because there's no thought behind it. There's no thought to story behind it. There's no, like, let's go ahead and do this. It feels very calculated. And I, man, like, I thought I was wrong before. I was like, you know, I was maybe, like, I felt like I was doubting it, right? Like, before, I was like, man, you know what, maybe I was wrong, you know? And then I watched the first one, and I was like, no, I kind of wasn't. This is kind of crass. And then I saw this one, and then I'm like, oh, man, yeah. And this really makes me, and I like Wes Ball as a filmmaker, but it makes me really worried for Zelda. It makes me really worried. And who knows, maybe they make a churn. Maybe they let him alone and they are able to create an actually truly rousing adventure movie. And maybe we get a Star Fox movie that's like, you know, a sci-fi influenced, like, you know, fun, rollicking adventure with Glenn Powell. Like, you know, like, the promise of Glenn Powell stardom is finally, like, you know, found in this animated series, and he can finally find his franchise that doesn't feel like a franchise, right? Because, like, you know, whatever. But doesn't seem like it. I don't know. What do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I want to be hopeful because, I mean, we were just talking about all that stuff. But if this were even like just right there with the first one, like that's all you really needed to do. I would feel better about, but you took like major steps backwards. And maybe you need more time to cook something up. Maybe you need to worry less about like fandom and more about just making a quality story. I don't know what the solution is, but this, they're going to be buoyed by, they're going to be like, oh my God, like people are showing up in droves. It's, you know, made so much money. So let's do more of this. And that will work maybe one more time.
Yeah. Once more. Maybe once more. And then they have to they have to figure it out. I almost hope that they have the Star Fox thing in the pipeline to give them time to think about this. Or yeah. Or maybe they're like, you know, the reason why this is, like I said, this is so preoccupied is like, this doesn't feel like anything is because they were worried about Zelda. Because to be quite honest, like as much as Mario is their flagship, like we know they're like Mario is Mario, right? Like he's kind of like Mickey Mouse in that regard. Like he has no personality. Like he has a personality, but it's the people around him that have personality. Like Mickey is very much like, ohoy, whatever, right? Like he's not really, he doesn't have a personality like Donald or even Minnie has. That's kind of Mario for Nintendo. But Zelda, there is a very kind of intricate, like we both grew up on Zelda games, right? Like literally grew up with 30 years of Zelda games. There's an intricate story and mythology to that. That's as deep and confusing as anything that Tolkien came up with. If not more so, right? Like, yep. it's as baffling as He-Man. It's as which complex also
got,
as...
We got a new He-Man trailer.
Yes, we did. We should talk actually about that. We finally heard like, okay, so like Jared Leto is basically not playing Jared Leto.
Let's spend the last 15 minutes on something I think both enjoyed.
Yeah.
So don't, like, if you didn't go see Super Mario Galaxy, the movie, don't fucking waste your time. But like, if you did and you enjoyed it, like, sorry, we shat on a movie that you enjoyed for 30 minutes, but it just was not good. Okay, so the first He-Man trailer, I got me a little like, okay, this is gonna be fun.
Yeah.
And like, hopefully, like, at much like the first Mario movie, hopefully they don't just make a bad movie. Like, even if it's goofy and stupid, like, I just need it to be fun. And then this was our second like trailer for this movie, and like, I'm so in on this, man.
Like,
it looks stupid. Looks so dumb, but it looks dumb like the Beastmaster, you know, where it's just like, oh, this is gonna be goofy and cheesy and like whatever, but I'm just fucking in, man. And then Skeletor talks and I'm like, okay, how is he even in this movie? Was he just the mocap guy? Because, like, they've done, if that's his voice, they've done so much to it that is not fucking Jared Leto.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know how this is possible, but it manages to be, like, it manages that weird, heady kind of balance of, if you like the original animated movie, guess what? If you liked the newer early 2000s like animation movie or show, buckle up. But if you also liked the canon movie, guess what? Manages this weird thing where it's like, we're going to reference everything, but it's weird. Nothing.
Like, it's, I will have to hear more of it because we only got a little bit of it in the track, but it is probably the perfect Skeletor voice, because like that's one of the concerns about Skeletor is like not only how weird he looks anyway, but like the voice of Skeletor in the 80s cartoon was so annoying.
Yep.
That like that was part of the thing, was just how annoying his voice was. And it was like the old, it was like a 50s style sinister voice.
Yeah, well, it was like him and Starscream were like in contention for the most annoying thing in the world. And like, I also think that now
Cobra Commander's kind of there too.
Yeah, but he is. That, like all I three think of that's them,
the same guy.
As guy. Starscream. Yes, it is. fucking Larry Hama. like you know, creating those characters. But anyway, okay. So my question is this: is the movie so meta it understood everybody's hatred for Jared Leto and decided to cast him?
I don't know, man. Like, is he in on the joke? Is there like what's? I really really want to know. With like, are we gonna get like something we don't want, and we're gonna get like a like Skeletor backstory where before he becomes like Skeletor, he's just Jared Leto, like. Pulling around with He-Man's parents, Prince Adam's parents. Like,
okay, so I don't know, but I can tell you this. Travis Knight, who directed this movie, who was also like, you know, the guy who runs Leica Studios, who made Kubo and the Two Strings, which is probably one of my most favorite animated movies of the last decade or two decades. He made Bumblebee, which has possibly in the first 10 minutes the best Transformers adaptation ever. Like that 10 minutes holds like the most comic animated accurate representation.
You're right. The first 10 minutes of Bumblebee are better than any fucking set of Transformers things that we got in any of the Michael Bay movies.
Anything,
like,
yes.
That Cybertron stuff is fucking good, man.
Yeah, but then he gives us a movie that's great, right? Like,
yeah, and the movie itself is actually really good. It's probably, like, it's definitely live action. It's the best live action Transformers.
Yeah, followed by the second, the one with, the one that we just recently got. And then Beast Wars? It was something like that. Like Rise of the Beasts, I think.
Yeah.
Then followed, like, actually, Transformers 1 is probably the best of the movies, but it's animated, right?
Right. Which we're not gonna Transformers, the movie, then probably Transformers 1, and then Bumblebee, and then the Beast Transformers, whatever that one was. And then it's probably the Michael Bay movies in order of release.
Yes, exactly. How did it, diminishing returns.
Yep.
Also, did you know, okay, so here's something wild. And like, I always love finding out about Nepo babies. Did you know Travis Knight, do you know who his dad is?
I do not.
Played by fucking Ben Affleck and motherfucking Air, one of the fucking like least basketball movies. Phil Knight. Wow. His dad is, well, that's how he, okay, so that's how he funded Leica.
Okay.
Because his billionaire daddy, like, this is one for good, right? Like, we talk about Baby Ellison and his fucking shitty dad.
Sometimes the Nepo thing does get a bad rap. Like, some people do take, like, the stuff that they're handed them and make, like, good on it. And I'm with you. I think Leica Studios is definitely like, oh, I use my inheritance, more or less, to put something good in the world.
also, like, Travis Knight, before he opened the animation studio, and this is wild, and if you guys don't believe me, just do your research and actually listen to his music. He was a rapper, and his rap His rap name was Chili T. And it's not as terrible as to not get a music contract, because I think Universal signed him, but it's bad enough to know that it's like Snow's informer, managed to reference like there was Snow informer, and then like, you know, there's the huge gap and everybody else, and that's kind of him. It is wild. Like, his career is wild, and like, stuff that he doesn't want you to know is very much out there. But yeah. Phil Knight, like, his dad was played by fucking Ben Affleck in the Air movie.
That's crazy.
But I don't know, like he's like,
I'm the excited guy for this movie, man.
Yeah, like, I am too.
Weirdly excited. I think everybody looks fucking cool. Like, it again, it's cheesy and goofy, but like, that's what the cartoon was. It was cheesy. Like, Mechaneck is fucking stupid, man. Yeah. Like, it's stupid. The dude's neck just goes up. Like, he's half robot and his neck just shoots up with his head on top of it. Like, the costumes are goofy, and like, but they're leaning it. Like, in the trailer, you see, I can't remember what the vehicle was called, but it was like this, like, one or two person vehicle, and it just had blades around it.
Yes.
And like, you saw that in the trailer, and I was like, oh my God, I used to have that. Like, it's, I'm so fucking psyched for this movie, man.
Well, I mean, fucking Battle Cat. Just seeing Battle Cat. Yeah. Like.
When he's then, like, none of you, what does he say? He's like, I know you don't know who I am.
I am,
who all of you are. Like, I was just like, oh my God, I can't wait.
it looks like, and then they get everybody. Like, you see shots of Ram Man. What?
Yeah.
Man, like, I had that fucking toy. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, the entire trailer, you want to do the Leo DiCaprio meme of pointing.
That's what I was doing. The movie theater. I was like, I had that. Like, it just fucking, and it might still just be bad. It might be bad.
Though, okay. But
it might be like so bad it's good.
Exactly. But also, like, you want to know what made me fucking feel old was Marina Baccarin as Sorceress.
Ugh.
I'm like, what? Wait. Marina Baccarin is Sorceress? No. And then I was like, Camila Mendes is Teela. Like, isn't it? What?
In your mind, you're just like, she should be playing Teela.
Yes.
And it's like, well, no, actually, she's a little too old to play.
Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, she's my age. She can't play. Like, or even like, okay, so like, you get like Evil Lyn played by Alison Brie. I was like, wait, what?
Look. Probably TMI, but maybe my first two, like, certainly cartoon crushes, but maybe my first, like, crushes ever were Evil-Lyn and She-Ra.
Yeah.
Like, maybe Teela a little bit, but, like, Evil-Lyn over Teela and Alison Brie in the Evil-Lyn outfit, like, I'll just be a, like, disgusting dude here for a minute, but I was just like, oh my God.
So like, she was like one of my favorite characters, so much so, like, I know this sounds weird, but when my sister, like, when my parents were having my sister, they let me give her her middle name, and I couldn't think of anything better. And so my sister's name is Amanda, but her middle name is Lynn. It's because of Evil-Lyn. But I never, but she didn't, like, nobody knew the reasons why until like 20, like, I think it was like, I didn't tell my sister until like, I think it was about 30 years later. Like, when she was around 30, I told her, I was like, you know, you do realize, exactly, you do realize that, like, you're named after an animated character. Like, your middle name is taken from an animated character.
And it was Evil-Lyn and the Baroness in G.I. Joe, man.
Baroness. Ugh. Yep. But also like it was kind of funny, cause like, Baroness is like, she like, it was always like, they always did, like, it was funny because like, when you watched those shows, the evil women that were in the shows, they all were drawn the same way. All looked the same. It was like, I don't know whether it was the same animation studio and they were just like, they were churning shit out, and like in Estonia, like they couldn't do anything other than just giving them the basic designs and shit. But always like Evil-Lyn, fucking the Baroness. And then who was the one in, oh God, I'm trying to think of the other one. What was the other, the He-Man ripoff? You know which one I'm talking about?
Well, there's a few. There was, I guess Brave Star was kind of a He-Man.
No, it wasn't Brave Star. It was, I can't think of it was kind of like, it was literally a He-Man ripoff. Like, and he had a sister. Oh God. Which one was it? I can't remember, but they all looked the same. They all had the same kind of like evil woman, that whatever it was, like, you know, like they were always like, you know, they always had the same drawing for the same actress. It was hilarious. But like, yeah, going back to that trailer, I'm excited. I am very excited. Yeah. I cannot, I don't know if it's going to be good, but man, they put together a trailer. Like Amazon, MGM, Amazon, I hate saying it because, you know, Amazon is the devil.
Upswing, man.
Yeah. I mean,
that's a hit. And for them to have two hits like successively like that,
mm-hmm.
it's going to really, you know, it sucks because like, well, we can still hope that the Warner Brothers deal falls apart, but like, yeah. All these studios getting gobbled up, like, it's just not been good for the studios. Like, MGM is one, like, it was on the downswing anyway, but getting gobbled up by Amazon and then still not being able to, like, be productive, and Amazon would have no qualms about, like, I don't know, that's just something we bought and we don't really use it anymore.
Yeah.
Like, if... You know, much like they did, like Freevee was their kind of to be, like, and they're like, oh, nobody's coming to it, so we're just, you know, it's whatever now. So it feels weird to be like, it's good for us if MGM can produce some content that people actually want to see. But I mean, it is good for like people like us that like movies or television or whatever. Like, despite Amazon being fucking evil.
Well, yeah. I mean,
I still order shit. Walmart's evil too, and I still shop there. Like, unfortunately, it's convenient. So.
I mean, okay. So, like, they literally have four more movies coming out this year that are going to be released in theaters. Like, they have, they have Sheep Detectives. By all accounts, it looks like it's going to be a hit.
Yeah, I hope so. Like, it needs to be, I'm sure it won't be a blockbuster kind of thing, but moderately, and it looks fun. Like, it looks good.
Well, I think it's going to get kids because of the sheeps, and then it's going to get the old folks in because of the mystery, right? Like, it's kind of designed for both. Like, I think it's going to be a sleeper because it's being released in May, right? And it's like the antecedent of all of the big budget action shit that we're going to get in May. But then you've got Masters of the Universe in June. But then you also have, they did announce, they did confirm that Madden is not going to be an Amazon Prime movie. It's going to be an actual release from MGM, Amazon Prime, Amazon. Like, it's going to be a theatrical one because they want awards for it. To which I'm like, go for it. Like, I will go see these in theaters. Less of the bluff and mercy and more of, like, you know. Well,
yeah, so we had Crime 101, The Bluff, and Mercy.
And Wrecking Crew.
Well, yeah, that was, The Bluff was not in theaters either, right?
No,
Crime 101 was in theaters.
Mercy.
And Mercy was in theaters. And those were failures. Melania in theaters, that was a failure. I mean, that's three like really rough like, just, you know. Four Kids Walk Into a Bank is theirs.
And oh, yeah, it is. That's right.
Like, it's getting a limited release. I really, really want to see that. So, but like, it keeps getting pushed around. Like, I don't know if it has an official fucking release date yet.
They're saying August.
Okay.
Like, they're saying sometime in August, you know.
Last year, it was coming out, like, in April or May.
Yes.
And then it just keeps getting pushed. So, but yeah, I really want to see that. So, it's Frankie Shaw is in it.
Yep. Liam Neeson. She directed it. So, yeah, that's like, she
directed it. Yeah. Yeah, we talked about this, didn't
yes.
we?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's based on a graphic novel. But yeah, like it's only good for us if like MGM can succeed. Like, it sucks that it's like through Amazon, but it's good for the industry. So, hopefully He-Man's a success. That trailer is fucking fun, man. Like, I'm so stoked for that. I think it's almost right there with Spider-Man for me, where I'm just like, oh, I can't wait to see what they do with it.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Like, yeah, like I'm genuinely excited. So we shall see. We shall see.
I don't know. I have nothing that I'm going to see this next weekend. So I don't know what we're going to be talking about, but I'm sure we'll figure something out. So
yeah. What is there? This, I know there is something.
I don't think there's much of anything because I think everybody was scared of Mario. So I think they just cleared the runway for 2 weeks. So Mario could have its moment. I see. So.
You know what it is? I'm actually seeing stuff this week for the four things that are in the future. Like, I'm seeing the Odenkirk movie, Normal, this week.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, like, which I'm really excited about. I mean, you know, anytime that they can do Odenkirk as a, whatchamacallit.
Yeah, it just as a badass. As, I'm yeah. there for it. So, yeah. Well, it'll be something next week. Until then, you can check out everything else we do over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yeah, themovieisle.com, where we've got a bunch of content and, you know, all the good stuff. 4K reviews and stuff that have started to repost, like, you know, started to post. I mean, of course, I'm always posting stuff. And then I'll have some of in theater reviews fairly soon, because that stuff is starting to ramp up for me. But yeah, go read it all on themovieisle.com.
And we'll see you guys next week.
See you guys next week.
Number one Star Wars, number two comics, number three Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number four Mario, number five Weird Al, number six Batman, number seven Kal-El, number eight Simpsons, number nine TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but they're really all sold out. See it all together if you're with me now.